We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Last week on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast, Fred Zinke said it's not very advantageous to have the first overall pick in a draft. So wouldn't you know it? He was given the first overall pick in the upcoming LABR draft. We'll talk about that and Aces tiers here on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Greetings, everybody. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by Fantrax, where you can sign up for free today and be entered to win an official MLB signed jersey from Vlad Guerrero. Simply go to fantrax.com/RotoWire and Underdog, where you can get a free 6-month subscription and first deposit match up to $100 with promo code RWMLB. I'm Jeff Erickson. He is Fred Zinke. We have a lot to talk about. We're going to talk a lot of Aces tonight. And we're also going to talk about draft order and our respective spots in the upcoming LABR draft. Fred, welcome. How's it going?
Good. I, you know, now that we have some draft slots for labor, now I can get a little more detail on full draft planning and since, well, without giving too much away, drafting on the turn this year and how I'm going to attack that problem.
Yeah. I gave it away in the title. I told everybody you got the number one pick. So, No suspense on this one here. There you go. But
I wouldn't say I didn't want the number one pick. It just wouldn't have been my first. It would not have been my first priority.
What's your last pick? If you're ranking 1 through 15, what would you like the least?
That is a great question. Let me just take a look here. If I was ranking 1 to 15, I'm not really loving like 8, 9, something in that range. I think you're 8. You're 8, aren't you, in labor?
I am 8, and I'm okay, good with it.
I'm not like dumping on your pick. It's not like you picked it or anything. I would not like 7, 8, 9. I think once I'm past the top 6, and I'll put Kyle Tucker in that group. I think once I'm past the top 6, once I'm out of the top 5, I think I just sit near, I'd rather sit later on.
So
I don't see a lot of difference between the guys from Kyle Tucker through to the end of the first round.
And I get the argument for the first round. However, I think there are other tier breaks later on where the middle of the draft is fine. And I like being in the middle from a standpoint of runs and being engaged in the draft. I feel like, you know, if I miss out on someone and I got 20 picks still to go to get someone to replace that someone, it's very uncomfortable.
Yep. And we have talked about that like maybe I'm thinking too much about the first couple rounds here. Like what I'm kind of thinking is I'd be just as happy with whatever Freeman, Guerrero, Alvarez as I would the guys who go a few picks ahead of them. Sure. So why not wait? And then obviously on the quick turnaround, I can get someone early in the second round, maybe who I like a little better, whether that's getting my ace or whatever, Pete Alonso or someone like that. But maybe that doesn't matter, really doesn't matter as much as I'm giving it credit for. And what matters maybe would be just if I can't be in the top 5 where I kind of like those 5 guys, maybe what matters is just sitting in the middle of the draft, like you said, the whole rest of the way, just for the sake of avoiding runs, Well, sorry, not missing out on runs and right. On certain positions and just that general flow. We've talked about this for sure a lot last year of like if you're just kind of deciding between player A and player B and you're on a turn like or near a turn, like you're not getting player B if you take right. player A. If you're in the middle of the draft, sometimes you decide between A and B and you're like, ah, you know what? A's got a little earlier ADP. I'll go with him. I kind of have them ranked the same. And then B comes back to you.
Yeah.
And then you're like, holy wow, I got them both. So
for lack of a better term, I like to call it value catching too.
Yeah.
Because yes. people are more inclined to reach for their boutique player or category or need mm-hmm. or react to a run on the ends, knowing that they have a long way away before their next pick. Mm-hmm. Certain players do fall.
Yes.
I had experience with that last year in the NFBC main event drafting eighth. I felt like I felt there were many times when that I'd be able to go ahead and do that. And I felt like, for instance, Matt Olson, I got in the fourth round. I think some closers got pushed up. And maybe you know, at the time, I thought that was a pretty good value considering where I saw him going in other drafts. I was like, yeah, give me, bring it on. And it worked out pretty well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think so. For example, if you were doing a draft and your goal was at the end of the draft, you know how you can see those on the NFBC website, like how mm-hmm. many picks before or after ADP you made each of your picks, right? So yeah. you can check that out after your draft where you're like, oh, you took this guy six picks earlier than his ADP, or you took this guy eight, you got this guy eight picks later than his ADP. If you were trying to win that game, if you were trying to max that out, you would want to pick in the middle of the draft.
Yeah.
Like yeah. that. Like yeah. If someone said before the draft, like, Fred, I want you to do the draft and I want your goal to be to get the most value versus NFBC ADP as possible. Like, so you're constantly taking people later than their ADP. I would want to sit in the middle of the draft to try to accomplish that.
How advisable is such a strategy?
Actually, it's probably not that bad.
Yeah.
Like in all honesty, like now for the last few years, I don't know about you, but I have like tremendous respect for NFBC ADP. Like yeah. it's the wisdom of the masses, and it is a really good group of masses, especially this time of year. Like if you've been drafting all winter, like you're probably really into this and you know your stuff. So like I think that ADP list is really good. If someone's hanging around way after their ADP and there's not an injury attached to them or something, or your draft room's not just weird where like all the closers are hanging around or something, but if it's just a random guy. Let's say you're doing your draft. You're doing a draft, and Nolan Arenado. I just have him on my screen right now. His ADP is 34. Like if he's sitting around at 41, like it's probably a good value pick at that point. If you're getting someone way lower than NFBC ADP, it's probably a decent idea. I wouldn't just blindly do it because it actually takes the fun out of it for me. Like I'd rather we've talked about this, but I'd rather make my own list and my own projections and have fun with it and pick from those projections. But I actually think that picking off the ADP list in an NFBC, an ADP list only, is not a bad plan.
Yeah, I think it's if you are uncertain about the player pool, if you're uncertain, especially about certain tiers of players, I think it's a great shortcut. Mm-hmm. I think at the end, and if you're competing in the NFBC itself, though, I also think, though, that you need to dig in and find ways to beat that ADP too.
Oh, absolutely. You're right. Yep. That is totally true. But it was one of the ways to beat that beat. I guess it wouldn't be beating the ADP. One of the ways to beat your draft to just be to find players who fell, like just find yeah. players who you're drafting.
I don't think it's a bad idea.
It would be really interesting.
Yeah.
I think if you've played fantasy sports long enough, you've probably been in a league where someone did end up auto picking and then, but then managing their team and winning the league. Like that does happen sometimes yeah. where if the ADP list is good enough, they auto pick and it picks them a decent group of players. And then if they run their team properly the rest of the way, makes the smart pickups, et cetera, you can still win your league. I would not do that. I would not use the ADP at any other site to do that. Like it's just not, there's too many dead teams, auto picks, whatever. But at the NFBC site, I would definitely like strongly think about that. Like I said, I don't do it because for me, it would take all the fun out of it.
Yeah, I hear you. And I think the later you go and more news has happened, the harder it is for that to work.
Right.
You get stuck yes. with everybody who breaks in spring training, for, you know, things like that.
Well, yeah. Well, if you were going to use an ADP list, for, you're right. So, for example, if I was doing an NFBC draft on March 25th and I was going to use an ADP list, I would have to run the ADP from like March 20th to March 24th, something like that.
Very short window. And even then totally. You get burned on like a Jacob deGrom late breaking news sort of thing.
Yeah.
And all that.
Yes. Yes. But I think it's like, so for example, last week I talked about how I would not want to draft Bobby Witt and why. And there were some people on Twitter who kind of reacted to that and chatted back and forth a little bit about what my rationale was on it. And some of the people who reacted to it didn't listen to the podcast. So that's always one of those annoying things where people are like, what, you wouldn't draft him because of this, 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 and this. And I'm like, no, that's not the reason. Did you listen to the podcast? Because I already explained that. But yeah, anyways, exactly. If I followed ADP, like I just talked about, let's say I'm picking 10th or 9th or something like that in a draft and he's still on the board, well, he's the guy I would take. That's why I like to do my own projections. I like to, like, and it's more fun for me to actually have an opinion that Bobby Witt is overrated in fantasy drafts this year. Like to me, that's the fun part of it for the whatever 20 something years that I've been playing fantasy baseball is to develop those opinions through research, whether I'm right or wrong, and then go with them and see how they turn out.
Exactly. Yeah, I think it's funny. And then all of a sudden you get accused of clickbait when they didn't read the article or listen to the podcast or you know, hear the actual reasons why. I think that's always hilarious there.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. So you have the first pick. Who are you going with? You can tell us now.
Yeah, I could. I might as well. So right now, and I could change my mind. And the for people listening, like the draft is almost 2 weeks away. So wait, it is 2 weeks away. It's not next week. It's 2 weeks away. So I've got a lot of time where I could change my mind. Right now, if it was tonight, I would take Ronald Acuna. So we talked last week about how you don't have him valued as highly as I do. I was looking through his like Fangraphs projections from a lot of the projection systems just to see if I was way off base, and I don't think I am. So I think I didn't bother running them into my spreadsheet, but I think if I did, like if I just took the average of the whatever is in there now, about 6 or 7 projection systems for him, Turner, Judge, Ramirez, Julio Rodriguez, I think the Acuna projections would come out either first or second.
Yeah. He's second in ADP. So it follows.
Yeah.
I did it from, I did my own thing. I pulled it up from January 5th on to through today. So, or 15th, excuse me. Mm-hmm. So basically 3 weeks in a day, basically. And Acuna's second. He goes Turner, Acuna, Ramirez, Judge, J-Rod. I teased Aaron Judge because I think you brought up the point that I thought that was pretty interesting is that he's not going first more often. You were a little surprised by that.
And I haven't ruled out taking him. I haven't ruled it out at all. I have never been an Aaron Judge guy. Like, I don't know if I've ever had, I don't think I have. I've ever had Aaron Judge on my team. I've always been skeptical of his health, just with the massive size of him. Now I'm skeptical about like how much of last year is repeatable. Is he going to steal bases still now that he has this massive contract? What about this whole thing with the baseballs last year for the Yankees games? I don't want to get too wrapped up in that, but obviously his home run total last year just blew all of his previous home run totals out of the water. I'll also say I don't like the Yankees lineup's fine. That's it. I don't love the Yankees lineup this year. Like it's not bad, but it's,
I agree, it
doesn't excite me.
I honestly thought that I expected them to do more on the offensive side of things here in terms of who they brought in. You know, they got Rodon, and that was a good signing, even though we may not like him, love him this year for the price. You know, he's going to help that top end of the rotation.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There were times when this lineup really struggled last year, and it was Judge and
nothing
only
else.
Judge.
Yes. Yes. He was carrying them last year completely in the second half.
Now, Harrison Bader, they'll have for a full season. I actually think he'll help some. But, you know, it's like Rizzo. How's the back going to be? Stanton was terrible in the second half. Mm-hmm. I don't think people realize the extent of how much he faded down the stretch last year. Gleyber Torres is projected to bat leadoff. I'm not thrilled to be drafting Gleyber Torres.
He's just a guy. He's okay. He's fine.
Yeah. Yep. You know, look at Hicks. you know, they're counting a lot on like Oswald Peraza and Oswaldo Cabrera, who I was telling Scott on Sunday's podcast, I'm going to mix these two guys up constantly.
For sure. For sure. And I look at the Braves lineup for Acuña, and like, it's not the greatest lineup I've ever seen or anything, but, but I kind of like it. Like it's Michael Harris is exciting. We'll see how the sophomore season goes, but he's exciting. Mm-hmm. Austin Riley's now established as a great player. Matt Olson is obviously a great hitter. Sean Murphy for a catcher is pretty good, is really good, actually. Ozzie Albies is like, he's someone who's like, he's not an amazing offensive player, but he's good. And he's someone who's been a really high fantasy pick at times. Like, I don't know. I like the bottom couple guys I don't love, but that's the same for a lot of teams. I don't know. I kind of like that Braves lineup.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah,
I do too. I mean, I love the Braves lineup. It's probably the strongest one through nine, unless it's the Dodgers, the Phillies when they get Harper back is going to be pretty sick too. And the Phillies obviously they start off with Realmuto at catcher too. It's such a huge advantage over the field, you know, having such a plus guy at a scarce position.
Yep.
And then you know they signed Turner too, so that's obviously massive as well, but. Yeah, I don't love the Yankees lineup. I'm with you on that. So, yeah, if Judge is merely very good, well, then, yeah, they're going to be hurting. He has to be great.
That's right, yeah. And I still – and then this is something I've been trying to check myself on, too. I think of Aaron Judge as injury-prone, and I don't think of Ronald Acuña as injury-prone. And maybe – to me, like, Acuña is a guy who's had one awful injury, whereas Judge had, like, 3 years or so of just getting banged up a lot. Now, but maybe I need to change my thought on that because Judge the last 2 years has been really healthy. Maybe I'm not giving Acuña enough credit for having had a torn knee. But I don't think of Acuña as injury prone, but like I said, because outside of that torn knee, he's been pretty durable.
I struggle with the phrase prone.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
He has been injured. Judge has.
Absolutely.
Yes. I mean, unless there's something about like his size that leads him to be injured more frequently, I guess. But you could argue Acuña's style of play, his all-out style of play, lends himself to being injured more often. Damn, Judge ran last year too. He stole bases. It's a tough call. It's a really tough call. And Acuña was his power was hurt a lot last year with him trying to recover from the injury. He stole a lot of bases.
Yep.
But he didn't have the same sort of power that he had before.
Yeah, drafting Acuña is just a belief that the first full season back from this knee injury, he'll go back to being at least a 30 homer guy, if not a 35. Like before this, like if you look at his 2021, he was on pace for like say 46 home runs, and then in the shortened season, if you prorate that out again, he's on pace for, I don't know, like say 35, something like that. The 2019, I know that's happy fun ball, but he hit 41. His rookie year, he hit 26 in 111 games. Like that prorates out into like easily into the mid 30s. So other than last year, he's consistently averaged those other 4 years out, kind of prorate the ones that he didn't play all the games. Like he probably profiles as like a 40 homer type guy, high 30s at least. And then last year he hit 15 and 119 games. So it's almost like just me believing that a guy who's only 25 years old, there's no way that power is just gone because of a knee injury.
Yeah, I agree. And the fact is, I may not be exactly where you're at on Acuña or where the masses are, but I'm not like way behind. It's not there's not a scenario. I mean, There is a scenario out there where I would take him. And I might be more inclined to do so in an auction than I would be in a snake draft. But yeah, right now I would have him behind the other top guys in that tier.
Right. And what's holding you back on that? Is that the knee and the power concerns?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And batting average too is tied with that. Cause if he's not hitting for that crazy power, he's not helping you in batting average. So, you know, he's got to do everything else.
Right. Yeah, no, that makes sense. I kind of have him, Judge, Jose Ramirez, Julio Rodriguez out of that group, like all kind of similar in batting average. I have some like 10 points higher or whatever, but I have them all within a range of about 10 batting average points. So at that point, you're just like flipping a coin in that category. And then I have Turner as a separated from those guys in batting average.
Yeah, that makes sense. I can buy that. So yeah, should be interesting to see what you do. We're going to live stream, at least the first couple of hours.
Yeah, for sure.
Of labor in 2 weeks. So, that should be super fun. That'll be, I think about, you know, maybe I want to say 8 o'clock Eastern time, I think is we're going to do that. We'll know exactly, but, that's something that we're really looking forward to doing. We did that last year. We'll definitely try to get a third man in the booth too. Maybe we'll get convince Joe Sheehan to do a live draft also. So we have all three ends of the draft.
Yeah.
That would be fun. We'll see. Maybe we'll bring in, like, I think Jason Collette joins us last year too. So that was a lot of fun.
Todd Zola's done it one of the years, maybe last year or 2 years
ago. I think so.
Okay. Before we leave it though, pick eight. What do you thinking?
So, in the world of my oyster there, I mean, I'm going to have a lot of different choices.
Yep.
Tucker, if he gets to me, sure.
Sure.
Be happy to do that. Probably doesn't.
Unlikely. Yeah.
I'd be very happy to take Ohtani. I'd be happy to take Jordan Alvarez there. I think that's eight guys right there.
Yeah. If those are your next two, then you're done. You don't have to think about it.
I think the question is, am I willing to take Ohtani? I think I probably am. Or I could go Mookie. I could go Vlad. I could go Soto. I could even go Freddie Freeman, to be honest. I don't think I'd go Bobby Witt. I did that once in a 12-teamer already, and I've got enough exposure to him. The reasons that you brought up, you know, that resonated with me. I did listen to that podcast. Yeah, so
he's the worst hitter in the first round, without a doubt. Like, well, at least like based on last season and based on projections for this season.
Sure.
He's the worst hitter in the first round. Pure hitter.
So at least the least accomplished. How about that?
Yeah, but even the projection systems for this year aren't profiling him as having, for example, an OPS or WRC plus that compares to guys like Guerrero, Freeman. I know he steals bases, though, so that is another part of the puzzle.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think probably Jordan Alvarez is who I'm going to end up with then. I understand, with the understanding that I'm going to have to find speed somewhere else. But that's okay, because I got Jordan Alvarez, and there's a lot of goodness that comes with that.
Absolutely, yeah, and yeah, you'll just have to, like you said, you can do a lot of things. You could look at JT Realmuto in the second round, which would get you speed advantage in a totally different way, where you get a 15-20 steal catcher.
Mm-hmm.
He'll probably be available when it comes back to you. You could look at, Betts will probably be gone. Machado's probably gone. Just looking at guys who steal bases. Tatis could still be there if the room's risk averse and if you were interested. And there's guys like Lindor
chance Bichette will be there. I really like the choices I'll have at 23. Really like
right. it. You could go Mike Trout. That would be a fun one to talk about. Yeah. Talk about if you started with Jordan Alvarez and Mike Trout, you'd have no steals, but talk about the two best hitters in baseball.
Two high average power guys. Yes.
Yeah.
That could be super fun.
Yeah.
I could dream on that one a little mm-hmm. bit there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, those are, I definitely have those choices. So that's going to be, that'd be super fun. Mm-hmm. So I like it there. Bichette, we got to mention him. But before we talk about Bichette and his contract with the Jays, a quick note. From our friends we got our friends over at Underdog. The fantasy baseball season is underway, and there is no better place to play than Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy baseball. Right now, Underdog has MLB best ball tournaments live, including the Dinger, which has $500,000 in total prizes. In best ball, all you do is join a contest, draft your team, and that's it. There are no waivers, no trades, and no in-season management. Draft 20 rounds of players and get the best cumulative scores in your starting lineup, which is three pitchers, three infielders, three outfielders, and a flex each week of the regular season. Getting started is simple. Go to underdogfantasy.com, sign up with a promo code RWMLB, and not only will Underdog double your initial deposit up to $100, but you also get 6 months of our RotoWire subscription for free. Again, that's Underdog Fantasy, promo code RWMLB. Draft your $100,000 Dinger team today. Jeff Erickson here with Fred Zinke. We are doing the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We're talking aces in a second. However, before we do that, it just got announced when we were doing the SiriusXM show today, Fred, that the Jays avoided arbitration with Bo Bichette, signed him to a 3-year deal.
Yeah, I haven't seen, I don't know if you've seen it. I haven't found, or I hadn't when we started doing the podcast, terms of the deal
right
yet. It seems like that this was just a plan with them and Bichette's representatives to wipe out the rest of the years that they could potentially go to arbitration.
Yeah.
Figure out something fair right now, because they're so good now at just projecting what his arbitration numbers will look like the next 3 years. And it gets them out of doing the arbitration hearing this year. So I haven't seen the numbers on that. Doesn't change too much with Bichette as far as like, they're not, I don't think this contract doesn't take away years of free agency from him.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of them agreeing. But Bo Bichette, it does bring up an interesting talking point on him in that he's someone who last year was picked in the top five in a lot of leagues. He was disappointing for most of the first 5 months of the season. His May was like pretty good. His other months were like okay, but disappointing for sure. And then he made some changes to his approach in September that was talked about on Blue Jays broadcast a lot, whether that is real or something they were just kind of trying to give him credit for. But he went bananas in September. He hit .403 with 7 homers and 27 RBIs. So that is quite the month. So obviously that's not sustainable for him, but it really rescued a lot of his fantasy value. It got him back to the first round this year.
Right.
He's someone who I've been a little bit torn on as far as if I had a late pick, like would I go after him or not? I have him ranked as though he would be a good option around the turn. I think I would do it.
Yeah.
Right. Like, it's a balance. It's shortstop, which isn't great because shortstop's pretty deep, but it's a really nice balanced skill set to start your team. You're getting an average of 290 ish. You're getting 20 something homers. You might get 20 steals, 15 steals, something like that. The Blue Jays lineup will be good. You'll get plenty of runs. Should get plenty of runs in RBIs. I don't know. Do you like him if you were picking 14th, 15th or something?
You know, I think I do. It's tough. It's a pretty close call. I'm trying to look at some of my alternatives there. I prefer Machado. We talked about Freeman. Of course, I prefer Freeman because I'm almost considering Freeman at 8.
Yep.
Bichette versus Tatis is a very interesting discussion.
I would take Freeman just for the record as well.
Yeah.
Bichette versus Tatis. Just a better player. Yeah.
What do you do with those two shortstops? Well, first of all, and by the way, Tatis does qualify at shortstop in most leagues that I've seen, even though because he didn't play an inning last year. Mm-hmm. So there's a question mark. Where does he qualify? I think he's going to be shortstop and outfield, at least in the NFBC. Mm-hmm. So are you willing to take Tatis at the turn and, you know, ahead of Bichette, or would you take either, both? What would you do?
Right now? Yeah. Off my projections right now, I would just take Bichette. Mm-hmm. I haven't built in, say, even 3 weeks. Okay, so let's say I just, doing some quick math on here, built in 3 weeks of replacement value. I can do that, no problem. Nobody will see how the sausage is made except for me, but
yeah.
I still, 3 weeks of replacement level value in like a 15 team league, I still have Bichette ranked a little higher. I have been like a little hard on Tatis because it's not just the suspension, right? It's coming off the injuries too.
Yeah, for sure.
I think I would just play it safe if it was just down to the two of them and take Bichette.
Yeah.
I think, what about you?
I think I would too, but I think there's still risk inherent in Bichette too. That's the tricky part. I might look at a pitcher here too. That's where I think I might say, okay, well, I'll just give me Gerrit Cole instead. You know, I might go that route. Because I think it's interesting. We're going to talk aces here in a second, and how to handle them this year, because it's different than we've seen in recent years. But yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, we're seeing not nearly as much ace inflation as we saw that we've seen in previous years, and I wonder if that's going to change in March.
Yeah, I'm really unsure this year. So usually that happens. And if we do get some injuries at the very top of the pitcher pyramid, I guess I could see that happening. But when I look through the pitchers, like, I just feel like, I don't know. Everybody seems to have Corbin Burns first. I do. Do you?
I think I go Cole over Burns.
Okay.
I'd be the nice guy and take whichever, you know, take the second starter. But you know, I'm fine with either of them.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, you can't, like, oh, actually, I'm wrong. So in the last week or so, Well, I think it's more one draft has really pushed Cole. Cole went sixth in one NFBC yep. draft. I was kind of looking at the last week or so. Anyways, their ADPs are pretty comparable. Yeah, like you can't really say in that scenario, you can't really say like, I'll just take the one who's left because you're going to have your draft spot. And if they're both there, you got to pick one. If you're saying I'll take the one who's left, you're not taking either of them. You're taking whoever's available in the next round. I do find though that after that, like it just seems to be a big pile of, and this was something I wanted to talk about tonight, like a big pile of really, really good, exciting starters who I think can be, a lot of them can be grouped into really high ceiling, but I'm not sure how many innings I'm going to get, or really high floor, but I'm not sure if they could actually challenge for like number one or two overall starting pitcher.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, it's definitely the top two and then those gap and that dynamic you expressed. Well, let's talk about the ultimate high ceiling floor is lava guy, and that's Jacob DeGrom. Mm-hmm. Now in Texas, 5-year deal. You know, if you're talking to like Rick and Glenn, like, our good friends in their system, they would not touch DeGrom this year. First year of a big contract, new location and injury history. I can see shying the heck away from that. But then again, if you're getting him at pick 27, pick 29, you're getting a little bit of a haircut, a little bit of a discount. Is that enough of a discount for you, Fred Zinke, to take him?
No, I don't think so. I think I'm just not in this year, and he could end up being like the ultimate league winner. I get it. I think I'm just not in this year. Maybe if I was in a contest, like some of the overall NFBC contests, I can totally see it in that. Especially maybe ones with like small buy-ins and a massive amount of entries and an overall component. I get it there. So let's say, for example, let's say he falls one more spot and he falls to 30 in labor. Like I could have Acuna and DeGrom. I could have someone who, if DeGrom stays healthy, I could maybe have the best hitter and the best pitcher. That's if you were in a, like one of those, like ones with a, like a low buy-in massive contest, I could see how that would be really appealing, but I don't think I'm going to do it. I know I'm just picking, these are just arbitrary numbers, but I put him at 140 innings in my projections. Where did you go?
Funny thing is I just adjusted him today and I have him at 136.
Yeah.
And he's pitcher 15 for me.
Oh, really? For me, he's pitcher 6 at 140 innings. I don't know how much he would move up if you gave him even just 5 more innings. So this is the thing. They're all so bunched that if you gave him even 5 more innings, which for him also means about 8 more strikeouts, 7 more strikeouts, he might actually leapfrog a couple of pitchers because it is so tight.
I'm still tweaking it, to be honest. Yeah. But like, I see a couple guys that listed ahead of him. This is strictly based on the projections. He's listed as pitcher 15. Yeah. I think when push comes to shove, I push him a little higher than that because of the upside and replacement value.
But if you don't have, but truthfully, yeah, if you don't have him inside your top 3 or 4 starting pitchers, then you're not taking him.
Probably not.
Because that's where he's going to go.
You're going to be faced with that decision. So I have DeGrom at 25 starts. I have him at 11 wins. I do have a little degradation in performance too. I think new location, maybe doesn't throw as hard as he has in the past. I've got him at 304 and 0904 in terms of his ratios, which... And that's worse than his three-year weighted average.
How about this one? It's a fun one because these two guys are really high ceiling. DeGrom or Strider? And the ADP is very similar.
There's plenty of risk with Strider too. Yep. Boy, you're talking about ceiling guys though. I go Strider, I think. I think the tiebreaker is a better team.
Okay. I'm thinking Strider as well. I think for me, the way I feel about this is, so Strider's not going to throw a massive amount of innings, like 190 or something. I could be shocked at that. Like he threw 130 last year. Maybe he goes 160, 170 this year. I just don't see him throwing a massive amount of innings, but there's just, I feel like there's no way DeGrom throws a massive amount of innings either. So yeah. even if he stays mostly healthy, like I still think he doesn't push past what Strider can get to if he's healthy. I just think with Strider, there's probably a much better chance of him being healthy. They both strike out batters at a crazy rate per inning. They both should have great ratios. I don't know. I think I would rather go with the young guy. DeGrom's also becoming, it's not just injury prone, kind of no spring chicken anymore. Like he's going to turn 35 before this season is half over. So just if you're looking for him to like reverse these recent injuries, you're talking about a 34, 35 year old reversing them. It's possible. Pitchers can last a long time, but like say, like there's guys like Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer, who have lasted a really, really long time and are still aces. But those guys didn't have this injury track record like DeGrom when they were in their early 30s.
True.
Where multiple years they're missing massive amounts of time.
Yeah, that's true. It's funny that Verlander had lost that two seasons so late in his career and then bounced back to have the season he had last year. You never see that. That's the thing that's so amazing, is to come back that late in a career and be so dominant.
So Verlander, I find him to be maybe the most interesting of the aces. Like, is he going to do this again?
He doesn't have to do this again and still be worth the cost that he's costing. I'll take Verlander over DeGrom.
Okay. Yeah. So, for example, Verlander threw 175 innings last year. Like, can he throw 175 again or even 165?
I think there's almost a better chance this year, a full year removed from the injury.
Maybe. Yeah. I know he's a full year older, which when you're a 40-year-old, which he's about to be, is a big problem. You're actually at this point taking a 40-year-old. I'm with you. I'll do it. But you're taking a 40-year-old and expecting him to be your ace.
Yeah, and he's pitcher 12 right now.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, well, that's including a couple of closers in there. So starting pitcher 10.
Okay.
Diaz and Clase are in that mix too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're getting him a full round in the NFBC, 15 players later than you're getting DeGrom, and I would take Verlander straight up over DeGrom.
I think I might take DeGrom, but it's close. This is why this discussion I find really interesting. These pitchers, and we're just scratching the surface on them, but these pitchers are all in a massive pile, and like we put Strider in that pile too, and right, and I can keep rolling. Yeah. I can, if you want to go for another like a little bit of a boomer bust guy, I can put Max Scherzer, Verlander's new teammate, in that pile. Like I think he's right on par with those guys, and he goes even a little bit later than them.
Yeah, I he's shown more wear lately in terms of performance as well as health. I'm a little bit, but I still probably have some. I'll probably have some Scherzer. I've got Scherzer for 163 innings this year.
Right. I think that's fair. I think, I don't know if he's shown that much wear, like the shortened season, he wasn't good, but said like the last 2 years, like 2021, he threw 179 innings, 2.46 ERA, 0.86 whip. Last year, only 145 innings, but 2.29 ERA and a 0.91 whip. Like his aggregate across the past 2 years would be roughly like a 230, high 230s, 230s ERA and a whip of about 0.88.
Yeah.
And a good strikeout rate. Like if he can get to 160, 165 innings, his numbers suddenly look really good.
I'll tell you two floor guys that I'm going to end up with a lot of because I think they get discounted because they're floor guys. Mm-hmm. Julio Urias.
Okay.
The projection systems don't like him.
Nope.
And nor does the ADP compared to what he's done the last few years. Last year, he was a guy going at the 2-3 turn, maybe early third round, right?
Yep.
Sometimes even early.
I was gonna say early third, late second, early third in the late drafts, like the main event drafts.
I got him in the second round in my second main event. I took him like mid second.
Yep. And you're right. At this point last year, he was a mid third, and by the end, he was into the second round.
And all he did was go 216, 0.96 with 17 wins. Mm-hmm. Fewer strikeouts than the year before. I get that might be a concern. I know early on there was a little scares about the shoulder, but he finished strong.
Yep.
He didn't fritter away down the stretch. He finished really well. down the stretch. He didn't allow more than two runs in any given start since July 10th. I don't understand why the systems and the drafters are discounting him so much. I'm going to get him a lot. I think he's the pitching equivalent of Dansby in 2021. He did exactly what we're looking for, and yet he's getting discounted. I'll take him.
Yeah, you're right. Like, if you believe in him, then your play has to be to just let everyone else take their ace, and then you
get another stud hitter in those first couple of rounds. I mean,
right.
And you need more than one ace. Let's be clear.
Yeah.
You know, you need at least two or three pitchers in the first 10, but yeah, I mean, I feel like I got a value take there. The other guy of a similar bent that I'm going to get a lot of is Yu Darvish. He's getting severely discounted, and I'm not quite sure why. He's pitcher 30, and I you know, there's some closers mixed in there, so I don't know, you know, how that compares to others. But last year, again, 3.10 ERA, 0.95 WHIP, 197 strikeouts. The K percentage went down. That would be the argument against. But the trade-off was the ERA was better. The WHIP was insanely good. Mm-hmm. You know, he cut down on his walks. Only 37 walks in 194 innings last year. Somehow Yu Darvish has become unsexy. I mean, we're talking about the guy with the gyro ball. He was going to talk about the guy that everybody was so excited to see his 1,700 different pitches. Why are people cooling off on Yu Darvish?
It's a really good point. And so in a 15-team league, you could go round four, Urias, and round six, seven. You could comfortably go seven, Yu Darvish. Yeah. That would allow you to either draft a stud closer to go with them, mm-hmm. or to draft hitters in rounds 1, 2, 3, and 5 and have four really good hitters to start your team. And still have, like in your rankings, probably like twin aces of Urias and Darvish.
Yeah. So just a fair warning. I see that path happening for me in labor. Although that's a different crowd than the NFBC, and I always have to remind myself of that. But for once, the NFBC crowd isn't pushing aces all that much, at least in the first round. And even the second round, I've seen a little bit of a drop off as well. We got a lot more of these guys to talk about. We're talking aces right now. We'll do a little bit more of this here. We're trying to make it not just NFBC centric, but even though that is often a go-to for when we look at it there, because great players we play against, really good ADP, and there's an overall contest that does skew a little bit there. But, you know, besides that, it's something that interests me. But I want to talk about some of these other ceiling versus floor guys. We'll talk about that with Fred. But first, a quick note from our friends at Fantrax. It's the most customizable fantasy platform in the industry. It offers the greatest fantasy experience for your dynasty, keeper, redraft, and best ball leagues. Are you coming from another service? Fantrax makes it easy. Fantrax can import any of your current leagues and customize if needed. Fantrax offers the most in-depth player pool in the industry, including minor league players. Has a great auction room, by the way. We've used, during COVID for the Tout Wars auction leagues, we used that, and it's worked like a charm. Do you need a customizable commissioner service for your fantasy league? Fantrax offers more customization than any other platform. Waivers, categories, scoring system, schedule. Fantrax offers custom solutions for all that and more, and it's all free. Sign up for free today and be entered to win an official MLB signed jersey from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Simply go to Fantrax.com/RotoWire. Sign up today. That's Fantrax.com/RotoWire. Fantrax, the home of fantasy sports. Also, real quick, our podcasts are always on the Blue Wire Network. Here are a couple of their ads.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
All right. Thank you for your indulgence with that. Taking care of business. Big thanks to Fantrax and Blue Wire. We appreciate them both. All right. So we're talking aces here with Fred and talking about the floor guys versus the ceiling guys. Here's a ceiling guy. Dylan Cease. I had no Dylan Cease last year. I wasn't like anti-Cease, but there was always someone in the room that was one of his biggest proponents. So I just never seemed to get him. What say you? As far as Dylan Cease for this year.
So, he's an interesting one. I have to use the pun. You decided to desist on Cease last year.
Yes, go for it. Good man.
It took me like an extra second there to just fully process how I was going to deliver it.
Yes, of course.
But anyways, it's out there. I'm sure at least three people who are listening enjoyed it. Cease is interesting to me because he was – so good last year, but I find a lot of, like, I'm hearing on a lot of podcasts, people say, you know, talk, do you like Dylan Cease at his ADP? And I find like all the analysts I hear say no. So someone likes him at his ADP because people are draft. That is his ADP. People are drafting him at that ADP, but I'm not hearing people step up and say, yeah, I like this guy at his ADP. I'm finding a lot of people saying that, you know, the walk rate still concerns them, that he was quite fortunate on batted balls last year, and basically that this won't continue. Sure, he's not going to have a 220 ERA again, but his FIP last year was 303. Could he have a 3-flat ERA? That's pretty good.
What do you have for him? I've got him at 302, ironically.
I have a 3.1.
Okay, so we're pretty close there.
It's the whip. It's the whip that keeps him out of my top. Like kind of pushed them more around the back end of my top 10, like 10th-ish. Because we haven't seen, even last year when everything was going right for him because of the walk rate, his whip was 111. Mm-hmm. His career whip's 126. I know that doesn't totally matter.
I've got him at 121.
Okay, I'm a little lower than that. I'm in the, like 117. But either way, every pitcher I have ranked ahead of him has a significantly better whip. And actually, if I scroll down my sheet, like the next five pitchers or so I have below him also have a significantly better whip.
Yeah.
So it's the whip that is concerning me. That is a category that I do prioritize a lot in the first round because we know ERA is more fickle. We know wins are very fickle. Like typically strikeouts and whip are two categories I really like to nail down early on. So I don't think I'll have any Cease as long as his ADP stays where it is, because I think I would rather mess around with some of the guys we've already mentioned, like Verlander.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely with you on that. So I think I'm even lower than you are on him. It's the walks. It really is the walks.
Yep. And I don't see that changing to any great degree. So if he was late, like if he fell another round, but it'd have to be like another round. Then I would be interested, but that's not going to happen. So that's anyways, I find the whole thing with him fascinating because, like I said, like a lot of, I don't hear podcasters saying, yes, I'm the guy who's taking Dylan Cease. I always hear them saying, no, I'm not taking him at his ADP. But like I said, ADP comes from somewhere. Some smart people are taking him.
Yeah.
You know, like this winter so far in these NFBC drafts. These aren't guys who just signed up at the last second and didn't put any thought into this. Like,
yeah,
there's people out there who really like him. And the strikeout rate is really good.
Yeah, well, it's the K's. I mean, you're getting such a big bump in K's with him. I mean, that's the thing that's so attractive. And, you know, there's that, and, you know, he got the 200, he had the 2.2 ERA. The funny thing is, I feel like I'm misremembering his season. Like, I thought, like, the end of the season was a little shakier than it was.
Yeah, no, not really. He powered through pretty well, right?
Yeah. Just, and so, to me,
Whoa, 1.13 ERA in September. Maybe you're just remembering that one October start, 5 innings, 4 runs, which isn't that bad. But he had 2 homers
in that one.
His September was terrific. His August was good, but not great. And then he came roaring back in September.
Let me ask you this though: does the balanced schedule, taking away,
yep, you know,
6 games from every team in the AL Central, does that change your opinion at all of him?
Like maybe a little bit. It might be like a tiebreaker, but I have Brandon Woodruff ranked right beside him, and his ADP is like basically right beside him. And you could say the same thing on Woodruff.
Oh yeah. It might even be a bigger thing this year as far as that goes.
Yeah. Yeah. I do feel like I know this. I haven't ranked the schedule thing as like a major factor, especially early in drafts. Like I'm looking for the pitchers who I think are the best pitchers.
Yeah.
Obviously factoring in innings as well and durability, but I like out of Dylan Cease and Brandon Woodruff, I'd rather not get into the schedule. I'd rather just try to figure out which one of them I think is the best pitcher.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Brandon Woodruff. I mean, there's the shoulder. That's the thing that kind of cools me a little bit about him.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to have any Cease or Woodruff this year.
And there's plenty of pitchers in that range. That's the thing. You can, that's the one thing I like about up here is like, okay, I don't want you just say, I'm not going to take any Cease, not going to take any Woodruff. Okay. So that means instead of Cease, I'll take Rodon. Oh, wait, you're not going to take Rodon, but I'll take Verlander. Or like I said, I'll take Urias and I'll take Darvish a lot. I'll take Scherzer. I'd take Scherzer before Cease.
Same here. Right. But their ADP is not even close.
Yeah, they are. They're right next to each other.
Scherzer and Cease. Oh, maybe I'm using. Yeah, you're right. I'm looking at an older one when I see that. You're right. Scherzer has moved up. You're right. And Cease has moved down a bit in the last. So Cease has actually moved down a bit from where he was at earlier in 2023. And Scherzer's moved up a little bit. So you're right. They've come together. If you went and looked up, say, the first half of January, I'm pretty sure the gap between them is pretty significant. That's, and then it's come back together. I was looking at a different list that I had with ADP data that was a little older. But yeah, you're right. I would take Scherzer for sure.
That's kind of like the end of a tier. And there's
would
like
you take about Julio Urias overseas and give up all those strikeouts?
Probably.
Okay.
I probably would. I mean, it would require, though, that I get, you know, I get that second starter sooner or maybe a third starter sooner or just get. You know, if I'm going my Urias and Darvish route, that means I'm getting a stud closer and I'm getting a second closer. Because I, you know, I'm kind of sacrificing the first tier of aces, and so maybe you make up for that by getting 2 and 3. You know, you're getting your second starter when some people are getting a third. But that's the trade-off, and you make up for it in volume, so you get the stud closers early, so you're not chasing closers in the teens, which I don't like to do anyhow.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, that this is the way you can play it off a little bit. I'm interested to see how this evolves in leagues as we get deeper into like what I would say like the real draft season. Will people play off the fact that this group of aces, once you get past Burns and Cole, is so bunched? Will they play off that to say, will everybody say, I'm waiting, I'll take who's left, And then that gives them a chance, for example, to draft Emmanuel Clase or to draft another stud hitter or something like that. And then I think you could be in draft rooms where seven people are saying that. So the pitchers just aren't going.
Yeah. Yep. That's true.
Right. And so, everybody's waiting.
Yeah, that's true. I almost wonder if everybody's doing that. Is there and nobody is talking doing pocket aces this year. No, I shouldn't say nobody. You know, it's always, I haven't heard a lot of people talking about doing pocket aces this year. And it's reflected in the ADP. Is there an advantage? You know, most strategies work better alone than when three other people are trying the same thing.
Yep.
This is a good year to do it.
Yep. And you don't have to use your first two picks on it. In fact, you don't have to use either of your first two picks on it. Right. You can go pocket aces in the
3-4
3-4 Exactly. And in three, you could take, I don't know. Let's just take a quick, you could take Aaron Nola. You could take probably not Strider. Well, you could take Strider if it's early. You could take Woodruff. Right. And then you could come right back. Shane McClanahan, if you wanted to take him. And then you come back in round four and take Urias. Take
or Bieber.
Scherzer would be tight. Yeah. It wouldn't quite make it at 14. You take Shane Bieber, something like that. Is that pocket aces to you? I think it is to me.
It's not in the traditional sense of like the strategy, but yeah, it kind of
like
is.
Like Nola and Urias. To me, that's pocket aces.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's not like Cole and Burns on the 1-2 turn or something, but to me that's still pocket aces. Yeah.
Right.
And that's a good start. Like I think Nola and Urias is a good start to your pitching staff.
Yeah, it is.
Like
it
for
is.
You picking eighth in labor, for example, I think you could pretty much pull that off. You could start with, if you wanted to, you could start with two hitters and then take those two pitchers.
Right. Yeah. Not a bad play.
And then you're not playing catch up from that point forward. You still need a closer. But you're not really playing catch up from that point forward where you're like, oh, next round, like I have to take a pitcher. I just have so little pitching or vice versa. So, or I've got this pitcher at the top of my list, but I've already got three starters. I can't take another one. Like if you started two really good hitters, like we were talking about Yordan Alvarez and then someone else in round two, and then those two starting pitchers, I think that gives you like a really wide group of options for the next few rounds.
It does.
To just pull your best value picks on your projections.
Yeah. I could see myself going Yordan and Cole. Somehow Cole slips to that, but I doubt he slips that far. But
I think in our labor draft he might.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Well, if he does, then I'll take advantage of it.
Yeah, that league is not a pitching heavy group. I could see it.
Yeah. I did try something a little crazy in the First Pitch Arizona Speakers League. It's the Draft Champions League where we don't have pickups. Mm-hmm. I went Yordan Alvarez to start, and I think I got him at like pick 11 or so, which I was pretty happy about. Mm-hmm. And then went five pitchers, two of the stud closers and three starters in there. And Cole was one of them. And just decided then I was just going to bludgeon. I went hitter, filled all my hitting spots after that.
Yep.
And then finally went back to pitchers after that. I had my core five that I knew I'd start every week.
Yep.
And then just tried to go volume elsewhere. We'll see if it works, but
not
I just wanted
strategy.
To get. I thought it was super fun to draft too.
Yeah.
Because I was kind of out of sequence of everybody else. There's a lot of pitchers going when I was taking hitters and vice versa. So, no, I'm missing out on some of those top hitters in rounds 2-6. So, I mean, there's a huge trade off there, but I figure if I'm going to get a lot of at bats, that's one of the things.
I think it's a really cool idea. And you're someone who drafts a lot of teams. So why not take the odd team and try, and if, especially if the draft board just starts falling in a certain direction, and try something with it.
Yeah. Well, I liked it. Yeah. It was super fun. Yeah. We'll see if I get enough speed and if I get the right hitters, obviously, but I'm kind of counting on a lot of playing time. And that's one of the things I like about that there. Mm-hmm. Let's ask before we sign off here, let's get a couple more of your takes, a couple more pitchers. Spencer Strider, we've mentioned him a couple of times, but I haven't really gotten the comprehensive Fred Zinke take on Spencer Strider because I think you're contemplating taking him at that 2-3 turn.
It's been considered.
Yeah.
It's been considered. Yeah. I think he's really good. It's the innings. Right now I have him at a generous projection of 170. I don't know if he quite gets there after 130 last year, but I could see it. I think it's possible.
I'm at 163, by the way.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. I think that's where I am. I'm kind of debating. Like I said, like I feel like the 170 is pretty generous. I think I could justify maybe anything from 160 to 170.
Mm-hmm.
I think a healthy Strider gets to 160, but it's just how much they let him go past that. So anyways, no, I would be very open to taking him. And this is, again, where picking on the turn is good, but kind of is like, I actually don't really want to take a pitcher on the 2-3 turn because I don't like those pitchers any more than the ones that someone else can get on the 3-4 turn. But I kind of have to, because if I wait for the 4-5 turn, like a lot of names that pretty much every name we've discussed so far is gone.
We'll see about that. I don't know.
Again, it's not a pitcher heavy league, this group, right? Often. So maybe someone like Urias makes it all the way to the 4-5 turn.
So at least by ADP again. Yeah. Urias, Bieber, Luis Castillo, Kevin Gausman. Those are your starting pitcher, Christian Javier and Alek Manoah. We'll throw him in about that, although Manoah goes around 70, so it's a little bit middle of the fifth. But If you're going to get Manoah, you'd have to take him at the 4-5 turn. You're not going to get him at the 6-7 turn. So
right. We'll
throw him in there. And I know you mentioned Manoah in the outline anyhow, so throw that name out there too. Those aren't bad guys to go double up on them. I mean, I think there's some ones I like better than others.
Yep. No, I agree. I think I think doubling up on those guys, like, would you double up on them as your aces? Yeah, I think you could.
Yeah.
On the 4-5 turn. Now you're mapping out a draft strategy for me. Like, could I double up on whatever, Luis Castillo and maybe I can get Luis Castillo and Zach Wheeler in this draft?
That would be wonderful. I like Wheeler a lot.
And that's after then at that point, I started with Ronald Acuna and two other hitters on the 2-3 turn.
Right.
So it's not a bad group. Yeah. And then maybe you come back and on that 6-7 turn, I haven't really looked at what's available. Sorry. The 6-7 turn. Wait, am I? Yeah, I'm doing that right. Yep. On the 6-7 turn, maybe you come back with another pitcher, at least one. Maybe Yu Darvish, for example. He's around. That's where he goes.
Yeah.
He's somewhere in there.
So, I'll just have to know that if I want Darvish, I'm going to have to take him in the 6 now. But because you won't let me get him in the 7th. Unless, of course, you went 2 starters at 4-5, then you probably wouldn't be. Then you'd let me have him. But, you know, we'll see about that. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, mm-hmm. So Alek Manoah, give me your thoughts. And we'll finish with him.
I think I'm in. I think I'm in at him at his ADP. I don't think I'll have a lot of, or maybe any shares, because I'm not really ahead of the ADP on him. He's Urias, actually. He's the same thing. The projections don't like him. All he does since he's been in the majors is pitch well and have low ratios and his strikeout rate's fine, but not that good. That's Julio Urias.
I think, there's a common thread. The common thread is the strikeouts have gone down.
Yep. On both of them. Yep.
And even if you want to throw in Darvish too, a strikeout rate at least has gone down too. So I think that's why systems red flag that perhaps. I almost wonder if sometimes these pitchers, maybe not pitching quote unquote to contact, but they're trying to be more efficient, throwing in the zone a little bit more. That might change this year, by the way, with the shift rules. We might see pitchers less inclined to pitch to contact and more inclined to try to get strikeouts. So I'm kind of curious to see what happens with that.
Yeah, and both Urias and Manoah are pitchers who traditionally their ERA estimators are always way higher than their ERA. You know, Manoah's FIP in his career is almost a full run higher than his ERA. Urias is about 65 points higher. So there are two pitchers who the estimators don't line up with the actual production. The other thing about Manoah that's different than Urias is Manoah's a horse. Like, he is 6'6". He's listed at 6'6", 260. Like, he threw 196 innings last year in his first, like, full season in the majors. Like, that guy is a horse. Like, he's not Sandy Alcantara, probably, as far as innings go. But like, he is going to give you, if he's good, he's going to be pretty valuable because he's going to give you a lot of innings. And we talk about strikeout rate a lot, but if he throws 200 innings this year, like, he's going to get 185, 190 strikeouts.
Right. You're kind of bowling it with innings. Yeah.
That's right. So he gets his 185 strikeouts in 200 innings. And then while Spencer Strider will still blow that out of the water, I was going to say maybe someone like Verlander gets his strikeouts in 165 innings.
Right.
Manoah gets them in more innings. So like Manoah, yeah, he is a, like we don't see those guys all the time, like a big horse of a pitcher. I don't want to say CC Sabathia because that's like he's not there. Like Sabathia was really good. But that's kind of what I picture a little bit, like just a really big, can throw a lot of innings type of pitcher. It's too early to say that with Manoah. He hasn't pitched in the majors long enough to say that he's really durable yet,
right?
But he's off to a really good start that way. And yeah, sure. And it, like I said, like the ERA estimators hate him, but I watched almost all of his starts as a Blue Jays fan, and man, he seems under control in that game. That last year I felt like he felt under control all the time.
Just yeah,
deep into games, getting one out after another, never seemed rattled.
He fell just short of 200 innings last year. There were eight pitchers that actually did get to 200 innings. I'm surprised there was that many. But he was next on the list at 196.2, but he did feel under control. I had him in both mains. I love him.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm kind of talking myself into him.
Good. Good. There's another guy.
And he is like Arias. He's the kind of guy who you get at a discount because, especially early in draft season, but maybe the whole time, because so many drafters use the projection systems.
Yeah.
Right.
And for good reason. They're good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, but if you can find a guy who the projection systems seem to not catch, they seem to be kind of missing them. And that's what's so far the last couple of years with Arias, like, that's what's been happening.
Yeah.
So if Manoah's another one of those guys, we talked last week about Kyle Hendricks, who like eventually people were left holding the bag on him. But for years before that, people were making money off him.
Yeah. I made a point of going off on that. And then he stunk.
But for years, people were making money off him. The projection systems hated him. A lot of the experts came on and said, do not draft this guy. And then he'd just go up and throw up another like 3 ERA type season, and you got him in round 7 or something like that. So,
right.
So I don't know. Manoah could be another one of those guys, maybe for another year or two, where until he puts together a couple more seasons like this, and then everyone just universally, if he does what he did last year again, he's a top 10 starter next year
for sure.
No matter what the projection systems say about him,
right. I tend to agree. And then by that point, then the projection systems have a chance to be right. So
that's right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Before we end, Manoah or Gausman? Just because they're teammates.
I think I go Manoah.
Yeah.
I don't like how Gausman had that stretch last year where he was pretty shaky. He was so awesome early on.
Yeah.
I'm going to go Manoah here.
Yeah, I find them fascinating because Manoah had one of the better BABIPs in baseball and Gausman had one of the worst.
Right, 363. Yeah, I just saw that.
To 245, and they're on the same team.
That's kind of so weird.
It is.
But that also shows, like, I think that's also part of Gausman's arsenal, though, too.
Yep, yep. He's always been a little bit of a high BABIP guy, for sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. So it's just that 364 last year is not... Like that's got to regress.
Yeah.
I think he's
going to be similar to last year. Like he was 335 last year. I wouldn't be surprised if he's like 320 this year, maybe a little better, especially because the balanced schedule, maybe better outfield defense, blah, 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 something like that.
Yep. But,
yeah. So, I think I'll end up with some Gausman too. I'm not against taking him.
Yeah. I have their projections like, pretty close to dead even.
Yeah.
With the two of them. Like, yeah. And some other guys in there, Luis Castillo, etc. Like I have some of those guys in with them too.
Indeed.
Yeah. Indeed.
All right, man. I think that's going to cover it. We'll do next tier aces or something like that, or maybe labor draft pep next week. We'll help you size out your middle rounds now when we do next week here. And then 2 weeks from now, we're going to do the draft live. We'll live stream at least a couple hours of the draft. So, good stuff. I want to thank all of our sponsors, especially I want to thank Fantrax, and Underdog for joining us today. And thank you guys for listening. We got James Anderson tomorrow. I've got a little bit of Raz Slam talk with Mike Alexander on Thursday morning. So I'm excited about that one as well. Thanks guys for listening. We'll be back at you next week. Take care.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.